The problem has been, up until we came along, frankly, and dealt with the reform of a lot of these tax concessions, there's no tax concession review committee. It's sort of set and forget. They get set, negative gearing came in 1914, and nobody says, well, let's have a look at it.
So that was Chris Bowen, the Shadow Treasurer, who joined me in the studio during this very lively budget week. G'day, I'm Catherine Murphy, political editor of Guardian Australia, and this is Australian Politics Live. About a year ago, Chris Bowen and I caught up for a wide-ranging chat about economic policy on the progressive side of politics, because there are a lot of interesting debates playing out both in the Australian context and also around the world. So what's coming up next is the next instalment in that conversation that he and I have about economics and economic policy. So over the next little bit, we're going to talk about this week's budget measures. We're going to think about Labor's national conference, which is coming up in the middle of the year. We're going to talk about whether it matters for the Labor Party to demonstrate to voters that you can contain expenditure growth. We're going to talk about economic growth and Labor strategies in that space. And we're also going to have a conversation about the siege mentality developing in the Australian business community and whether binary constructions and polarisation is ultimately good for policy outcomes. Have a listen. Okay, Chris Bowen, thanks for joining us.
Great, Catherine.
Let's start with a couple of issues that are in the news cycle, just because it is budget week. Neither of us can ignore that. Now, you've indicated what you'll do on personal income tax for the low and middle income earners. What's in dispute at the moment is what happens in the next phase of the income tax cuts that the government's announced in the budget. So this phase of blowing out the 37% tax bracket. So what's your inclination at this point?
Well, let's just look, Catherine, at what the government's done, because it's pretty ordinary on several levels. Firstly, they've said, we've got a plan and it's 7 years away. Now, really, seriously, I'm all for long-term vision, but do you know what's going to be happening in 2024?
No,
I don't. I can't tell you what the world economy would be like. I don't know what you'll be doing, I intend to be treasurer, but, silly. This is a government which said last year, we've really got to increase income tax to pay for the NDIS. Now, this year they're going, don't need that. But we do know what's going to be the situation in 7 years' time. That's point one. Point two, we've asked in Parliament some pretty reasonable, I would put to you, questions about the cost. How much is it going to cost each year? They won't answer.
Mm.
Didn't
answer me either.
No, yeah, exactly right. You asked at the National Press Club and he told you the costs were unreliable. But the Parliament, apparently, we should just automatically vote for it. And the third one is progressivity. I'm all for dealing with bracket creep, but if it's a big call to say a cleaner on $40,000 should say pay the same tax as, say, a Member of Parliament on $200,000,
mm-hmm.
that's a very big call.
Mm.
So I would put our position as being cynical on those 2024 tax cuts,
right?
In particular.
Okay. And company tax, we need to address that too, because a couple of weeks ago you said that you'd tell us your position after the budget.
After the budget. I didn't say on budget night or, the day after the budget or, a week after the budget. I said we'd wait and see the budget figures. That's the case. We have seen them now. We're not going to drag it out, but we'll also decide, to coin a phrase, we'll decide our announcements and the circumstances in which we announce them. We'll announce a position on what's already been legislated on company tax soon. But we're dead against what hasn't been legislated. We oppose the legislation. That our position's been clear. But we do recognise when something's gone through Parliament, it's been implemented. That's a change of circumstances which we need to consider.
Mm-hmm.
We've been doing that, carefully, as the what politicians normally say at this point is carefully, methodically and soberly.
Sure.
But it's all true. And
let me just tempt you a little bit. Is there any way that the tax cut could become more acceptable if you oppose some or propose some conditionality on it?
You see this argument about let's have a corporate tax cut but link it to wages growth. I don't think that works technically. What we have done though is announced our policy of the investment guarantee, which is for all businesses, big or small, Australian owned, foreign owned, we don't care. If you invest in Australia, we'll give you quite a generous upfront depreciation of 20% over and above what is already in the depreciation schedules. Now, the principle behind that, Catherine, is it's conditional on investment.
Mm.
We'll only give you some tax relief if you invest, and that investment will create activity and jobs. Now, The government's plan is to say, well, we'll give you a tax cut. Now, that will apply to investments you make in the future, sure. It will also apply to investments you've made in the past, 20 years ago, 10 years ago, take your pick. But you don't have to invest. You can give it in share buybacks. You can give it in increased dividends. It can flow offshore. There's no conditions at all. They just sort of hope that it works. Now, in the United States, sure, Trump has reduced the headline rate. He's also provided upfront depreciation allowances. Most economists will say of his plan, and, you know, obviously I'm not a huge fan of much that Donald Trump does, but of his plan, the thing that's working most effectively is the upfront depreciation. Mm-hmm. Because it's immediate. Business needs cash flow. They say, oh, hang on, in Australia you get 20% back straight away. Well, that's a pretty attractive thing. So our plan is actually very well designed and much cheaper than the government's plan. But to get back to the nub of your question, what's already been legislated, we're working through.
You'll come back to me.
I mean, I'll come back to you and to everybody else. And, you know, one thing that we could not be fairly accused of, in a political debate you can be accused of all sorts of things, but one thing we could not be fairly accused of is being a small target on policy or not announcing all our policies early. You know, most oppositions historically have sat on all their policies almost to an election campaign. We've been far from that. We've been putting out policies since 2014.
Yes, sure. And okay.
And we'll continue with that. I mean, it'll be very clear for all to see way before an election.
In good time. Okay, all right.
In due season.
Goodness me, a bit early for in due season. Now, we spoke, you and I, about a year ago. We had quite a lengthy conversation about where Labor was at, sort of economically, in the middle of quite interesting debates in progressive circles about the alleged death of neoliberalism and redistribution was back in fashion and all of that sort of stuff. So we sort of roll on 12 months from that. Obviously, the party has a national conference coming up in July. The left, it's not news to you, want to assert some ownership of Labor's economic policy agenda, and we've seen that play out, really, during this period of opposition. Do you expect there to be much debate at the national conference about Labor's economic direction?
Look, I think, with all due respect, Catherine, I think these debates get a bit overblown. I understand journalists, you know, you have to write it and, you know, people talk about it. But, you know, this isn't a factional thing. I mean, I, as a matter of record, I'm a member of what is broadly called the party's right, you know, Centre Unity, we call it, have been for 30 years now. I've been Shadow Treasurer for 5 years. We have the most progressive policy offering, I would put to you, we've had in 40 years. I make no apologies for that. I'm proud of it. I happen to be a member of the right. Bill Shorten happens to be a member of the right. This is the policy agenda we have developed because it's right for the times. It's what the country needs. I get on very well with members of the so-called left, you know.
Well, it's not so-called left.
Well, the left, okay. But, you know, the point I'm making to you is I think the factional thing is sometimes overblown. Yes, we're all members of particular groups. We're honest about it, whereas the Liberal Party pretends they don't have factions, when of course they do. Mm. Yeah, we have factions. But I talk about issues of economic policy with members of the right, members of the left, you know. I would have plenty of discussions with members of the left where they come and say, you know, we really appreciate all the work that you've done on policy development. Have you thought about this idea? And I say, yes, I have, and here's the reasons why it won't work. Mm-hmm. Or, that's a good idea, let me have a look at it. You know, and so with members of the right, it's all a bit sort of overblown, this sort of there's a big contest between the right and the left.
Well, no, I don't see it as a big contest in those crude factional terms. I think that there are, you know, there are interesting debates happening around the world in progressive circles about where you set these various parameters, right? It's not that crude, but obviously, at the Labor conference, there will be, you know, Darcy Byrne, for example, has foreshadowed that he'll move a motion committing Labor to increasing Newstart in the first term of government. You know, the left national meeting several weeks ago, you know, the Buffett rule still kicking around.
Well, see, but, you know, you'll get that. And, you know, as I said to people, again, we have these discussions, people come to me and say, what about the Buffett rule? I say, oh, hang on. Okay, I get what you're trying to achieve. You and I have had this chat before. Get what you're trying to achieve, make the tax system more progressive, but there's unintended consequences of the Buffett rule. It hasn't been done anywhere in the world. Much better to achieve that objective by doing things like closing down tax minimisation through family trusts. Mm. Tick, done it. Mm. Closing down the regressive nature of dividend imputation refundability. Tick. Mm. Reforming negative gearing. Tick.
Yeah,
reforming capital gains. Tick. So, you know, I'm getting on with the job of doing those things achieving the same objectives, but in a carefully designed way. And that's what I would say at the National Conference. And, you know, by and large, many people who might have said to me a while ago, oh, how about I have a look at buffer rule, now say, oh, geez, you know, you're doing it another way.
So you would argue you're already pretty progressive.
Absolutely.
In the party's positioning.
Probably.
And there's no need to go down the hill accelerating.
Well, you know, I'll be at the National Conference, which is always, you know,
a lively affair.
It's always a lively affair. People are, you know, it's their chance to have their say. Good luck. Good on them. You know, great. I get the chance to have a say a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, as a member of the Shadow Cabinet, the Expenditure Review Committee, the leadership team, you know, I get my say every day. National Conference is when I get to come with other members of the leadership group and listen to people from across the party with their views, and we have a good discussion.
What about the mix of, again, it's obvious, it's a matter of record that over these two periods, these two terms in opposition, you have come up with a number of measures now that are aimed at structural repair over the medium term. They're revenue-oriented measures. I still don't see much sign in your show of restraint around expenditure. I don't see it. If it's there, I don't see it. So do you think that that is still required of a Labor government shaping up to be an alternative government in that sort of economic management frame? Do you still think Labor governments have to demonstrate expenditure restraint?
Short answer, yes. Both have to be part of the equation. I'd say this about expenditure, though, and revenue in the mix. You know, I've sat around, I was a member of the Expenditure Review Committee of the Cabinet in government for, I think, 4 years or so. I've been a member, chair of the Expenditure Review Committee of the Shadow Cabinet for 5 years now. But in government, the Expenditure Review Committee does what the name suggests.
Yeah.
Looks at expenditure.
Yeah.
Tries to pare back, etc. The problem has been, up until we came along, frankly, and dealt with the reform of a lot of these tax concessions, there's no tax concession review committee. It's sort of set and forget. They get set, you know, negative gearing came in, and, you know, 1914, and nobody says, well, let's have a look at it. The expenditure goes through line by line. Now, that will continue in Labor government, of course. I'll be chair of the Expenditure Review Committee in Labor government. We'll go through the expenditure line by line. But there needed to be a shift to actually look at some of the tax concessions and shut them down or reform them.
So that's what we've been doing.
So it's a sort of a rebalancing. Now, we've been also looking at expenditure. Yes, we have more to say. But a lot of the, you know, I can tell you from government, I mean, Wayne Swan in office dealt with a lot of the expenditure. This government has dealt with a lot of the expenditure, sometimes with our support and sometimes with our opposition. But, you know, we closed down the baby bonus, for example, which is expenditure was unsustainable. You know, you can only do that once. So if there is fat in the expenditure system, it has been looked at. Mm. It may or may not have been dealt with. Been looked at. Mm. But the things that needed to be reformed in the taxation system had not been looked at.
No. That's an interesting point you raise, that there's a structural dimension to that process, that tax concessions needed to be looked at. No one was looking at them. But you realise, of course, the external perception of that, though, is that some of your shadow ministerial colleagues in social portfolios are flat out spending money, you've had to ride in through the ERC process in order to make sure the money's there to spend.
No, well, that's not. I wouldn't accept that. I mean, part of our role in the Expenditure Review Committee is to approve new initiatives or to disapprove new initiatives. So, you know, what we call line shadow spending ministers are all very enthusiastic individuals who got into politics to do good things and come to me and Jim Chalmers with all these fantastic ideas, you know, that are really good and they've done a lot of hard work. And it's Jim and my job to say, great idea, love your work, thanks for everything you put into it, can't be afforded, thanks very much, see you later.
Sure.
And we've had hundreds of those conversations.
Right.
So first law, do no harm, you know. And sometimes you say, look, this is great. We might be able to afford it one day. Keep working on it, but not now, you know.
So you're actually knocking back a hell of a lot that's not in the public
domain.
Without
going into details, that's our job.
Right.
That's their job to come up with the good ideas. Our job to prioritise and say, listen, that's a good job, but we're prioritising something else at the moment. You know, we've announced a big education funding plan. We make no apologies. That's our priority. That's the biggest expenditure I'll take to the next election. We'll take to the next election is funding for schools. Having spent that money, it can't then be spent on other things. Now, of course, we'll have other initiatives. But in terms of the big sort of decisions, that's our job to make them.
Another noticeable shift, I reckon, in the 12 months since we had a detailed sit-down like we're doing now, or stand up. Anyway, we are standing up.
We are standing up. For those who can't see us, which is everybody listening. Yes.
We are standing up. Has been this sort of, this growing sense of siege in the business community.
Yeah.
That's, you know, we've seen these please like me ad campaigns from the banks, from the miners, from pretty much everyone. We've seen the BCA have to set up its own campaign vehicle. Like, these guys clearly think the barbarians are at the gates. And I don't mean that quite as flippantly saying, but that's their perception, right? They think they've got to defend their corner. They think they're under siege. Now, a lot of the language in this space too is very, well, populist and polarised. You know, we see these sort of very, these constructions, billionaires versus battlers, all this sort of stuff, right, that's just replete in political language at this point in time. Now, at what stage does that become, that polarisation, which we're clearly seeing, become corrosive to achieving economic reform? And at what point does it completely corrode the centre ground and push people back to battlements that are not necessarily helpful for the long-term national interest?
Well, Catherine, I think it's a very fair question. Let's put it in context. I think it's part of a broader international polarisation as well. I mean, political debates across the developed world are becoming more polarised around the world. We're probably actually doing better than most countries. I mean, we haven't had Brexit, we haven't had Trump, you know. We've had 27 years of uninterrupted economic growth.
But that's the point. That's why we haven't.
We haven't had
a recession. That's the difference. That's actually the difference.
Sure, but I'm just making the point that globally there's more tribalism.
Yeah.
You know, people are reverting to, and partly that's social media. I'm not blaming people, but partly
And the mainstream media. It's not just social media.
Well, I'll get to the mainstream media, but social media does reinforce that because algorithms, you get social media to reinforce your views now. And you're right about mainstream media. I think it is now more tribal than it has been historically in the past. A lot of media spend a lot of effort attacking each other, you know, trying to pull apart other people's stories. Not just in, that's always happened a little bit, but I think it's much worse. On the business community in particular, sorry, I went on a little bit of a detour, but on the business community in particular, the business community should stand up for itself and make its case. It should also get its house in order. I make no apologies with Bill Shorten calling for a Royal Commission into the banks and financial services 2 years ago. I don't think our position has been found wanting in just, 14 days or 19 days of hearings so far, early. What we've seen has shown this Royal Commission was absolutely necessary and justified. This is not specifically what you asked me, but on the relationship between Labor and the business community, which I think is where you're
probably getting...
Implicit in the question.
Yeah.
I find history instructive. You know, people say now, I wish it was like the Hawke-Keating years where Labor and business got along. Well, you go back and read the clips, you know. Keating was accused of being anti-business because he brought in the fringe benefits tax.
Superannuation
and capital gains tax.
Yeah.
He was broadening the base and lowering the rates. That's what we're doing in some respects. I see what I'm doing in many ways as a continuation of the Keating legacy. But let's not pretend that, you know, the business community was clapping him or he was saying nice things about the people criticising him in the business community at the time.
No, that's certainly true. And you're correct to remind people of that the golden age was,
Yes, and now move to today.
Yeah.
Obviously, one of my key roles is relationships across the board. I have relationships with the trade union movement. That's me, as you would expect. I have relationships with business. I spend time in boardrooms. I talk to people. I'm honest with them. I say, listen, this is where I think you're going wrong. They're honest with me. We have good and frank discussions about things we agree with and disagree on. A lot of business says to me in private, hey, yeah, of course we'd prefer to pay lower corporate tax, but it's not a big thing for us. You know, in an ideal world, sure, but, you know, if I could give you five things as treasurer you could do to really help the business community, lower corporate tax wouldn't be on them. And I say, well, are you going to say that publicly? And they say, no, we don't want to rock the boat with the business council. You know, okay, that's their call. But the business community is a large and diverse group. You know, they say, well, things that matter to us are federalism and getting the vocational education system working and growing into Asia and having a government focused on Asian literacy and working with us on trade. And that's what really drives us. And we have great discussions. So, of course, yes, there's a robust debate politically. No apologies for that. And they are entitled to put their views, and we're entitled to put ours, and government indeed is entitled to put theirs. But I don't think it's as binary as...
Feels pretty binary.
Sure, but, you know, when I go to... Oh, I mean, part of my role as the alternative treasurer is to have open and constructive dialogue with business. And I'll be, and I say to them, you do the wrong thing, I'll come and down on you like a ton of bricks. I'll be tough. But if you're out there creating jobs and it's a good sustainable business model, and you know you're treating customers fairly, what can we do together?
Mm. Yeah, I'm not saying you shouldn't. That there's no role for obviously for political parties to muscle up against business. And the case you make about the Royal Commission and the banks is compelling.
It was very controversial. You know, a lot of people said, "Oh, Labor's just populism. This isn't necessary." The banks said it to us. Why are you doing this? You know, it wasn't conventional wisdom when we called for the Royal Commission.
No, that's quite right. But there is nonetheless, there is a lot in Labor's framing and styling that emphasises these polarities. Now, your answer to me is, I'm just going about my business in orderly fashion, and you know, I'm honest with them; they're honest with me. And but still, it's I as a citizen, I worry that about. You know, how stylized the fights are becoming and what that means in practical terms for, you know, long-term economic reform. I think it becomes more difficult, but maybe I'm an Eeyore.
Well, I can only tell you, if I was Treasurer, we'd have a very big, bold, aggressive, progressive reform agenda, but I'd be working with business on the good things. I'd be, as I said, tough on them, those doing it wrong. We'll be implementing the recommendations from the Royal Commission. Some people might not like it. Mm. We won't be reducing the corporate tax rate for big business, but we will, you know, have a well-designed, calibrated relief plan, you know.
Well, obviously, a Labor Party should not be supine to business interests. Obviously not, but it's, you know what I'm saying. Anyway, we've had an interesting...
We've had a good go.
We have. We've had an interesting conversation about it, and I know more about your view than I did when I... opened it up.
Hopefully those listening do as well.
Yeah, well, exactly. So, all right. So just growth now. Mm. Again, something we talked about 12 months ago and we need to talk about it again. I went back actually last night and reread Hearts and Minds. You know, flicked back over it. I hadn't actually read it for a couple of years. Very heavy on growth, that book. It basically says, economic reform, you say in the book, has an ever-receding finishing line and Australia's economic growth in coming years will be largely determined by our competitiveness and productivity performance. Now, is that right?
Yes.
Okay. So what's Labor's competitiveness and productivity offering?
Well, it's multifaceted. I've talked about the Australian Investment Guarantee, which is tax. It's about Future Asia, our framework for better engagement with Asia, which we've announced several... I won't bore you with all the policies we've announced, but you know, I think we've announced 8 or 9 policies. We've got a lot more to announce on.
Mm-hmm.
But in my view, we pay the Asian century lip service. We all pretend that, you know, Australia's in this great position to capitalise on Asian economic growth. No, we're not. We have a huge amount of work to do. Not enough of us are learning Asian languages. There's not enough people with Asian business experience on boards. We're not exporting enough to Asia. All those things. It's about productivity and human capital. If you look at the Productivity Commission's report, I think it was last year, into productivity, I could have written most of it. You know, it's about investment in people. It's about schools and skills, vocational education and training. Lifting healthcare, you know. I have the honour of representing, one, the largest industrial estate in the Southern Hemisphere, a lot of jobs in my electorate, and the diabetes capital of metropolitan Australia. You know, a lot of people with... dealing with diabetes and being admitted to hospital, not very productive when they're in hospital. You know, if we can fix that, they'll be more productive. You know, that's a long-term challenge. So it's not just the government says, let's reduce corporate tax and everything, you know, everything will trickle down and flow through. I have a very different view.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to have a multifaceted approach. I know it's more complex to explain. It's just taken me, you know, I don't know, what, a minute to explain it to you rather than saying, I'd reduce corporate tax. That's 1 second. It's more complicated. But it's a whole lot more effective.
What about the labour market, though? Obviously, the Change the Rules campaign is literally in the streets as we speak.
Yep.
If we look at the social media feeds of major union officials, their construction of it is, we are building socialism on the streets. That positive?
Well, from their point of view, yes. I mean, the union movement and the Labour Party have links, but we are different people with different jobs to do. We respect each other and listen to each other and talk to each other. They are pushing the envelope of their campaign. That's their job.
But obviously at a certain point in time, Labor has to determine
Correct.
How much of that campaign...
As we will.
Yes. And what's your view? What's your view about where you draw those lines?
Well, we've announced some policies,
yep.
right? We will announce more. Brendan O'Connor, who's the relevant shadow minister, talks to me about those, and we consider the implications and the balance. I think it's fair to say that, you know, with low wages growth and penalty rates being going backwards, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, people should be talking about this. And good on the union movement for going out and making the case. We as an alternative government, and hopefully incoming government, need to consider the points they're making. We don't just tick them and say, well, the ACTU said it, so we're going to say it.
So likewise,
we don't reject it either.
Sure.
We have a process.
What are you unlikely to tick, do you think, at this point?
As you know, Catherine, I'm not here to announce policy.
No, but I can. It's a pertinent and relevant question.
Sure. Well, I'm going to refer you to my previous answer. They put their case. We consider it. Indeed, the Business Council puts their case. You know, we consider if it's a sensible idea. I mean, it was the Business Council that first suggested 10-year costings. You know, said if you're going to do a big social reform or big change to the budget, why don't you do 4-year costings and 10-year costings? I thought, oh, yeah, that makes sense. We now do that.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, yet the ACTU, for example, and other people in the union movement ran a campaign and suggested better domestic violence leave. We thought the case for that was very strong.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that people, you know, the government says, oh, it can't be afforded. I don't think that people, and to be honest, you know, obviously primarily, not exclusively, but primarily women, are going to pretend that they've been victims of domestic violence to get some leave from work.
Seems unlikely.
So it's very justified and affordable. So we've adopted that as a policy.
But they're not going to get everything. Is that the message?
Well, of course we're going to consider. We're going to consider their policy offerings, but it's not an automatic tick.
Okay. Just a couple of things, because we've had a good chat and you're very good to give me this.
It is my busiest day of the year.
Yes, I know. And you're good to give me this time. I appreciate it. Just a couple of things very quickly. Labor, there's a fierce battle on for Labor Party president. Who are you voting for?
It's a secret ballot.
You're not endorsing anyone?
Look, Mark and Wayne, obviously, there's a few candidates, but Mark and Wayne are both parliamentary colleagues of mine. And obviously, I'm a member of Centre Unity, and Wayne is the Centre Unity candidate.
So you're voting for Wayne?
You're not voting for Wayne. I think I've answered your question. Wayne is the Centre Unity candidate, and
yes.
I'm a member of Centre Unity, and you should expect me to vote accordingly.
So you are voting for Wayne.
You should vote accordingly.
Just part of that big proxy battle is a discussion about party democratisation. Have you got any quick views on that?
Look, I wrote about this in Hearts and Minds. I have views about it, but I haven't focused on it in the last couple of years because I've been focusing on economic policy.
Is it a conversation the party should have?
Ongoing.
Mm.
I think, you know, we should always be looking at ways of growing the party and involving people and, giving them a say in our processes. The shadow cabinet will always be the ultimate decision maker when it comes to what policies we take to an election. But, you know, I'm a strong supporter of our leadership model, which the party members get a 50% say. Now, that was controversial. I was one of the first people to suggest it. I'm not claiming credit for it being implemented, but I was one of the first people to say...
I hope Kevin's not listening.
No, well, he did it, but I was one of the first people to call for it and say, I don't think it should exclusively be the choice of those elected to Parliament to who's going to lead us. I mean, you're the leader of the Labor Party. Yes, the parliamentary Labor Party, but also the entire Labor Party. So let's give the party members a vote.
Mm-hmm.
I think the 50-50 model between the party and the caucus is the right balance because the caucus knows the candidates very well and has to work with them every day. So I wouldn't support a switch to the British model, for example. Mm-hmm. But it's been a big step forward to open up the leadership.
And Senate pre-selections and stuff you should look at.
Well, states will come to their own. You know, the states make those decisions, state branches. But, you know, in principle, is more party involvement and more of a say for members a good thing? Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And leadership, you raised it. Sorry, can't help myself. Do you ever want to lead the Labor Party?
Not particularly.
What?
Well, you know, by that I mean I want to be treasurer. I really want to be treasurer of Australia. That is my focus. I mean that seriously. I've been treasurer all too briefly. I've got unfinished business. That's my job. That's the job I'm focused on, you know, and that's what I intend to continue to focus on. I hope I'm treasurer for a long time.
Are you the only person in politics who had no aspiration to lead a major political party?
I said it wasn't what particularly drives me.
I heard what you said.
I'm not going to say I want the job or I don't want the job. I am saying Bill Shorten's got the job. I hope he has it for a very long time. I hope he's a long-serving, successful Prime Minister, and I'm his treasurer for a long time.
Very disciplined. Thanks so much for joining us, Chris Bowen.
Great pleasure, Catherine.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. We really do appreciate it. Don't forget to subscribe if you like the listening. You can basically sign up on iTunes or via your favourite podcast app. You can also leave us a rating or a review there. We really do appreciate it. Thank you so much to Miles Martignoni and the production team at Guardian Australia. It's a flat out week and they work around the clock. It's really very much appreciated. Thank you too for listening. We'll be back next week.